Hi there, and welcome to today's episode of The Christian Mindset Coach. I am your host, Alicia Michelle. When we go through hard things, it is very tempting to stay stuck in the darkness. And we've had other people on the show talk about what it's like to ask God for wisdom through tragedy or to get a fresh take on something, maybe after we've walked through it. What I love about today's guest is that he gives us a very practical tool of a question that we can ask while we are in the middle of any circumstance, hard, good, anything. And it's a way not just to get a perspective that can help us defeat darkness, but it's a way for us to connect deeper with Christ. I think it's a very practical tool that invites us into a deeper relationship with God. It allows us to step into a different place than maybe we would if we were just kind of viewing things from our own lens, so to speak. Today, our guest, Pastor Alan Wright, he wants to teach us the simple game-changing prayer, Jesus, how do you see this, as a way to battle the ever-present difficulties and attacks of the enemy. It's something, like we said, that not only can give us a new perspective, but can draw us deeper into a relationship with Christ. And I think that's something that we're all looking for, very practical ways to do that. I mean, it's one thing to just hear truth and to even hear it on a Sunday morning or in a sermon, maybe in a car somewhere as we're driving. But we want to know, God, how can we encounter bits and pieces of what it means to walk with you every day? I want to have that close fellowship the way the disciples did who walked with Jesus. I want to know what that's like. And this is the kind of question that helps us get there. Alan Wright is the lead pastor of Rinalda Church in North Carolina, a 110-year-old congregation vibrantly renewed and meeting in four cities. A popular conference speaker and seven-time author, including The Power to Bless, Pastor Alan hosts a daily 30-minute radio program that airs nationally on 400 stations. He is known for empowering people to see their lives in a whole new light through a gospel message of pure grace. Alan and his sweetheart, Anne, have two grown children, and when not writing or preaching, Alan enjoys golf, guitar, the beach, and making his new grandbaby smile. The new book that he is sharing about is called Seeing as Jesus Sees, How a New Perspective Can Defeat the Darkness and Awaken Joy. And I have to tell you that this book was something that I actually took the time to really digest and go through over a several month period. Sometimes I get books and I have to preview them quickly for an interview. And this was one that I really resonated with me in some of the ways that he was speaking and some of the illustrations that he gave. And you'll hear some of those illustrations in our conversation today. So I invite you to check it out and to lean in as he talks about this prayer, Jesus, how do you see this in our conversation? All right, Alan, how are you doing today?
I am doing great, despite the fact that I've had the disaster company downstairs redoing our whole downstairs after a untimely sewage flood. No more needed than that. It has been testing. It has been testing whether I do have the joy of the Lord, regardless of circumstances or not. And some days I'm passing the test better than others. We have so much to be thankful for, and God's so good. So we're grateful, but we are sort of homeless right now, living with some friends.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Well, I know you were sharing some of that story before we went on here, but I think it's pretty appropriate that we're talking about perspective and seeing things as God sees them despite the dark times. So let's just start at the top of this conversation. Why do you think this is important to have that perspective in the world that we live today?
Yeah. Well, I mean, seeing determines how we think and how we feel and how we behave. So our perceptions, right? And I often like to say it this way, if we believe something that's false, we don't think it's false. We believe it because we think it's true.
Exactly.
So nobody believes a lie on purpose. It just believe it's truth. And our lives get shaped like that. My life got shaped by the fact that my dad left home when I was in fourth grade, and I didn't really know why. So that begins to shape some of the ways I'm seeing things, right? And he was so beloved in our community, and I loved him, but he also struggled with alcohol. And anybody that's joining us that has grown up in an alcoholic family knows that you got to get some new lenses, because the lenses of shame that say, there's something wrong with me, I don't measure up, or there's something different about my family. And so It began to dawn on me more when I was thinking about a story of a businessman who got on a subway and end of a busy day. And he, you know, he just wanted to relax, read the paper, and he had his paper unfurled. A man gets on with a couple of boys that are really rambunctious, and they're just bothering everybody. And you know how it is when our minds, we start going places. I can only imagine the businessman is thinking, why doesn't this father do something? So, and it doesn't take long that the inattentive dad is bothering the businessman more than the rambunctious boys, you know, because it's our mind, right? He's going,
yeah.
And I don't know what he's thinking, but I mean, he could be thinking that's the problem with America today. Nobody disciplines their kids anymore. You know, boy, if it was me, I'd be doing this and such. You know, finally, he stewed on it long enough that he just, you know, said to the man, he couldn't help it. He said, sir, can't you see your children are bothering people? Don't you think you ought to do something about that? And as if waking from a fog, the man said, you're right. Yeah, you're right. Boys, calm down, calm down. He said, I'm not thinking straight. He said, their mother, we just left the hospital. Their mother died a couple hours ago. And boys, calm down. I'm sorry, sir. I don't know. Well, in an instant, I mean, like that, the businessman's feelings and thoughts changed because he saw it for what it was. And when the businessman goes, oh, no, no, they're not bothering me. I'm so sorry. Is there anything I could do to help you?
Right.
He meant it. And Alicia, that's what gets me is I want to live and I want to help people live with gospel transformation. Like, how is it that we're actually changed? Not by trying harder to be a good Christian, not by saying I ought to be more patient, right? I mean, who isn't listening right now that's not saying, yeah, I ought to be a more patient mom? But think about this businessman. He was so impatient, but when his vision changed, when he saw it, he became compassionate. So impatience turned to compassion. Frustration turned to kindness. And that inner turmoil, it turned into love. And this is just through how you see something. And I think this is going on all the time, all around us, all the day. We think we're seeing it actually, and we're not. And then when we see it, when we get the right lenses on, we go, oh, wow. Yeah. We don't then convince ourselves to change. We are changed. So I think this is why Jesus said in so many different ways, I'm the light of the world. I don't want you stumbling in the darkness. I think this is part of his mission, not just physical eyes, but spiritual eyes. He came to open the eyes of the blind. So I've been praying a little prayer for some years now. Jesus, how do you see this? I'm just admitting I might not be seeing it correctly. It could be coming through my lens of shame. It could be coming through my long, frustrating day. It could be just coming because I'm stressed out because I had to move out of my house because sewage backed up downstairs.
Yeah.
I just don't know. I'm having to say, Jesus, how do you see this? Because I'm weary of trying to make myself a better Christian. I want to be transformed inwardly and thoroughly. And this simple spiritual practice is one of the avenues towards that kind of change.
Hmm. That's powerful. I mean, the science behind it totally lines up with that. Whatever we choose to believe is what becomes our truth. And so we can know truth, but not believe it. Whatever that thing that we're repeating over and over, that becomes our truth, whether or not it aligns with what God says is true. And so
Yes. If
we can switch that to be what Jesus sees, it's such a great prayer to ask God for that wisdom, because how do we know from our limited perspective what God is really seeing from this situation, right?
And the other side of it, as I realized I began praying this more and more, Jesus, how do you see this, is it's not just what we're seeing incorrectly, but it's also what we're missing.
Yes. Yeah.
Right? Because the wonder and beauty or opportunity or you name it, that how much might we be blindly walking by. You know, I was searching for the book and I read a lot about visual perception and how our brains can get tricked, you know. But one of the most interesting is the famous gorilla in the room video. Perhaps you're familiar with it. These researchers that they did this little experiment. I hate to kind of blow it for our listeners because it's fun to do it yourself, but spoiler alert, I'm going to kind of blow the experiment here. What they did was they took these people and they had them some wearing light colored shirts, some dark colored shirts, and they're passing a basketball back and forth to each other. Mm-hmm. And they told the participants in their research, we want you to watch the video and count the number of times that they pass the basketball. Count how many times, get that precise, you know. Okay. And so they would count the basketball passes, and the correct number was 34. But that was inconsequential to their experiment, because the real experiment was that at the end, they would say to the participants, and while you were watching the video, did you notice anything unusual? And about half of them said, no, didn't see anything unusual. They said, you didn't notice something happening in the, no. And then they say, you didn't see a gorilla walk in into the middle of the video. About halfway through the video, there's someone dressed up as a gorilla, walks in costume, walks right into the middle of the players, and a gorilla beats his chest and then walks off. The gorilla's on camera for a full 9 seconds.
Wow.
And this, what they call inattentional blindness, happens to at least about 50% of the people. It's an interesting thing. You know, now that I've blown it for our listeners, but like my wife and I did it, I saw the gorilla, she didn't see the gorilla. You know, if you just do the experience, well, what's going on there? And in the first place, it's like we can be so focused on something, thinking it's the important thing that we could miss. And I wonder, you know, I thought of that experiment because I wonder if this is part of what Jesus meant when he called the Pharisees blind guides who strain gnats and swallow camels.
Yeah.
So focused, like for me, getting so focused on counting the path. And I have spent too much like counting the passes, doing it. I make 100 on the exam, you know?
Yes.
I'm going to get it perfect. Yeah. Any moralistic or legalistic approach to our life with God, can it become more like doing it right rather than seeing what there is to see? And so our vision's blurred and we see things incorrectly, or we miss the Grand Canyons that are right in front of us that would cause our souls joy. And all of that is in this little prayer.
Well, I think that's, unfortunately, the downfall, one of the many downfalls of humanity, and that we can just look at things only through a specific lens. You mentioned that lens of needing to do it right. I think the other lens is we can feel so slighted or so frustrated sometimes too by like, God, why are you working it out this way? Why did you cause a flood in my house? You know, why did you, all these things? And there can't be a good reason for it. There can't be anything behind the scenes happening. It's just, this is the way I'm seeing it and that's it. And we're just mad and angry and we feel like we're, you know, being attacked or all these things. And like you said, we can miss the Grand Canyons that are sitting there.
We can miss it. Yeah. So my contractor, while we're having to pull off drywall and all of this, and you know, and we're trying our best, my wife and I, to like not be frustrated. But I mean, we had to rent a house so the kids could be here in Thanksgiving, and it was a little bit of a bummer. And we're trying to make sure we're ready for Christmas. All it's stressful.
Yeah, yeah.
But he said, you know, this disaster relief company came in, and they start pulling some drywall off, and they say, you've had some moisture that was here in this wall from some previous time. Ooh. And we're concerned there's some mold that might be there. We're glad we're here to clean all this up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, does that mean God flooded my basement for me? No, I don't think. But
yeah,
just saying the perspective that we have will entirely shape how we feel about life. Mm-hmm. Alicia, also, our relationships. I mean, you and I, we want to help people in relationships.
Right, right.
I want to help people in their relationships. And I have, for decades of ministry, I have seen it up close and firsthand. The horrors that are wrought through even the tiniest seed of judgment that, as the writer of Hebrews says, springs up and defiles many. That feeling of once I'm positive that this is the way you are, and now that's the only lens through which I see you. You know, and we start saying to each other, you always, you never, you, and this judgment that then clouds our vision. And then we're looking for it, right?
Yes, exactly.
And I watch the healing power of the Holy Spirit when someone's eyes are unveiled and suddenly just feel this tremendous lift, freedom when they see it correctly, and forgiveness comes and love. So if we didn't pray this prayer for any other reason, it'd be worth it for our relationships.
Yes. Yeah.
Spouses, parenting, friendships, all of it.
You mentioned those are very true, the always, never, and how we can just look at a relationship or a person and think that's it. And I'm just going to try to find ways to prove myself true. So what are some other false perceptions or other things that we put on that get in the way of us seeing God's perception of a situation?
Well, I divided the book in some different parts. The first part is about what caused our spiritual blindness. But then the next three parts really are about three categories. And, you know, it's like as an author, you wish you could write endlessly.
Yeah.
Because you got to narrow it down. But these categories, I think, are the ones that matter. How we see ourselves, how we see others, and how we see the world. And so maybe we talk a minute about just seeing ourselves through Jesus's eyes. We've talked a little bit about shame. I think we also, through the lens of disappointment and regret in our lives, we see ourselves too often as disqualified because of our frailties and failings.
Yeah.
I think that's important. And there's one chapter in there that really was built on a sermon I came upon with Charles Spurgeon when I was getting ready to preach about Peter taking a few steps on the water and sinking. Mm-hmm. And Jesus saying, "Oh, you a little faith." And I think an earlier time in my Christian life, I thought, "Oh, you a little faith." That's Jesus going, "Tisk, tisk. Shame on you. You got no faith. What's wrong with you?" You know, but I think instead, "Oh, you a little faith." It's one word in Greek. It's a little faith one.
Hmm.
And I think it's more of a pet name that Jesus had for him. I think it's, Jesus didn't shame people.
Right.
Liberated people.
Yeah, yeah.
He blessed. Yeah. He was the author of all blessing. So he doesn't curse. He doesn't put a bad label on somebody. So why that? Well, maybe it's like when I was a kid, I was the youngest of three brothers. And I always played with the older kids. And so I was always the small one with all them. And so I got nicknamed by all my brother's friends, Little Al. And that was their pet name for me. And I thought it was a few years ago, I was in Atlanta. Just we'd happened to be stopping through Atlanta. We were shopping at Lenox Mall. And I was up in the men's department. And I saw a neighbor that I hadn't seen in maybe 20 years or something. I recognized him. And he didn't recognize me. And I said, is that you? And I called him by name. He said, "Yeah." I said, "Look a little closer." And he looked and he said, "Little Al," you know. And I was like, we get next thing, you know, we're hugging each other in the apartment. But I wonder if Jesus, you know, like little faith ones, you know, because the reality that Charles Spurgeon said is to have a little faith means you have some faith.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'd rather have a lot of faith than a little faith.
Right.
But God uses a little faith. You know, maybe somebody's joining us, like, you feel like my faith's not very big. Okay, God can work with that.
Yeah.
I mean, like, go back and reinterpret the Peter story. Yeah, he was unreliable. He was always capricious, and he thought he could do everything, and then he'd fail. But we ought to highlight the fact that the text says in that story, Peter walked on the water. Mm-hmm. I don't mind in just two steps. But nobody else that I know of in human history has taken two or three steps of water. He did.
Yeah.
And Jesus took him by the hand, brought him back. And maybe if we saw ourselves through Jesus's eyes, we might see that a little faith can get you a lot further than you realize. You know, maybe like two guys that get on a plane in Chicago to fly to L.A., or let's make it San Diego. And one of them is a million miler who flies all the time. He gets a lot of work done. He enjoys his trip. He takes naps. He just doesn't even think about it. The other guy is a novice flyer who's a nervous wreck, and they both get on the plane.
Mm.
The one guy is enjoying his flight. The other guy's holding all with all his might to the armrest. You know, he's like this tense for 5 hours and doesn't enjoy the flight at all. So one had a lot of faith, one had a little faith, but they both got to San Diego.
Right. Yeah.
So I think we put limits on ourselves that God doesn't. You know, and I think if we think about how we view others,
let's press pause right there, because I want to talk more about ourselves before. I think you're really, really... You're really, really onto something there. As you were talking about that, the whole concept of little faith, I kept thinking about the word compassion. That when we hear ourselves saying, "Okay, well, I have this limited perspective," or "I don't have enough faith," it's not that God is yelling at us and shaming us because we don't have enough faith. He is saying, "I understand what it's like to live in a world where there's all these things that are causing you to be afraid and causing you to have anxiety. I want to walk with you and be with you in that. And I want to help you see something different. And I want to give you faith." right? So it's both. It's not just, okay, I have to work harder to get Jesus' perspective because he's going to be disappointed if I don't, you know, have the right perspective. That's not it at all.
It's just the opposite of that. It's it's why I'd rather shift my prayer to help me see as you see than it is to say, help me overcome this fear I'm in right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's fine to pray that, but I think the answer is to see, once you begin to see with his eyes, that changes things. I mean, how did Jesus view a storm? Mm-hmm. Well, I wish I weren't so afraid of the storms of life, but if I could look at it the way he looks at that, he's not afraid. And I was just thinking about, I tell the story of the book that when I was a kid, I can't remember how old I was. I was old enough that I shouldn't have been afraid when we went to a haunted house, which we shouldn't have gone to. Don't ever go to a haunted house. I hate a haunted house. But I did one time I was a kid, and maybe I was 10. I don't know. But I felt like I was, you know, again, I'm with my big brother, some older kids. The last thing I wanted to do was be afraid.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Frankenstein decided to pick on me.
Oh.
And I mean, I was like, I guess I was the little guy. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. You're a little owl. Of course you were.
I was a little owl. Yeah, it's like, you know, I was a little owl. He jumped around every corner. He was there all the time. I'm trying to act like I'm not afraid.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm little. He's big. I'm there with my big brother, though, who's taller than Frankenstein. And after a while, I'm about on the verge of tears.
Aww.
And my big brother, David, I love him to this day for it. He finally just turned to Frankenstein and he could look down on Frankie just a little bit. And he looked at him and said, hey, he said, leave my little brother alone. Can't you see he's afraid? I kind of wish he'd left off that last part. I wish he just said.
Yeah, don't admit it.
Yeah, don't admit it. But he said, can't you see he's afraid? Leave him alone. And Frankenstein slinked off.
Oh.
Well, that's a good illustration of fear and faith. It wasn't so much like my big brother was saying, I'm not going to be afraid. I'm not going to be afraid.
Exactly.
Just saw Frankenstein as a dude in a costume, but I was seeing a real monster.
Yes.
The fact that he saw nothing more than just a costume around a teenager.
Yeah.
Wasn't as tall as he was.
Yeah.
For that reason, he was not afraid. So faith is not this self-discipline to get mental assent to biblical truths. It's not us somehow pulling ourselves up and saying, I need to believe, I need to believe. Right. Oh, no, no. God is for us being saved. He's for us in faith. He wants to give us that. So he wants us to be able to have new perspective that changes our sense of security in him because we're seeing it more as he sees it. And that's where faith is born.
Right.
So ask him for his eyes and you'll get faith.
Alicia here. If you're tired of feeling never enough, I'm here to tell you, you don't have to stay stuck in the exhaustion of perfectionism, people-pleasing, or trying to prove yourself worthy. What if I told you there's a secret weapon for rewiring your mind to align with God's truth, the proven brain science tool that pro athletes have used for decades and that I've been using with hundreds of Christian women to break free from this idea of feeling never enough? I want to tell you all about it at this workshop, Break Free from Never Enough. Yes, you can find healing from a lifetime of worry, of shame, and striving. Sign up for the Break Free from Never Enough workshop at vibrantchristianliving.com/mind. This workshop is absolutely free. Why wouldn't you join me? Pick a workshop time that works for you at vibrantchristianliving.com/mind. Right. Yeah, that's great. What would you say, or how would you think that Jesus sees the world today?
I went through the gospel narratives asking that question. Mm-hmm. And part of what I do in the book is an invitation to let Jesus become your tour guide. Let him show you what you couldn't see. Like when many years ago, my wife and I went on a whirlwind tour of Europe and we were on a budget. And so I was not willing to pay the tour guides, you know?
Yeah.
We just walk around archaeological sites and it just looks like old rocks.
It does. Yeah.
You got to know, somebody knows what they're seeing. And so we started just nosing our way in next to groups that had a tour guide to listen.
Hey, that's creative. I love it. That's funny.
I really want the book to be an invitation to let Jesus be your tour guide.
Right.
And maybe to study the scriptures that way. And that's the way I looked at it. Like, what if we came alongside of Christ in the stories of Scripture and look with him? It's good to look at him. It's good to listen to him. It's good to learn from him. Right. But it's also a way to read the narratives of the Gospels. Look with him.
Oh,
and what I found was very interesting to me. I found that a lot of the things that I think make me mad in today's world, which are similar to the Roman Empire in which he came, I think instead it made him sad.
Hmm.
A lot of what frustrates me and others and Christians today didn't leave Jesus with this angry knot in his stomach as much as he wept over Jerusalem.
Yes.
He said, how I long to gather you like a mother hen would gather her chicks. He rode in, he looked out from the Mount of Olives and he wept. Multiple times he wept.
Right.
So I think that he's sad. Mm-hmm. And, you know, okay, I must remember Jesus, he did say, blessed are those that mourn, for they'll be comforted. And I wonder if sometimes our anger is masking the deeper issue, and that is grief, of accepting something we can't change. I like what many, many years ago, Counselor Larry Crabb had to say about anger when he said it's really our blocked goals that cause our anger. And when we confuse a goal, which is something we can change, we can control. A goal is like, okay, I can make a decision. I'm going to exercise 3 days a week. That's a goal, and I can decide to do it. I'm in charge of that. But there are a lot of things that it's just a desire. You know, somebody joining us right now probably has a desire. I wish my husband were more attentive or more emotionally available or whatever it might be. And it'd be noble and godly desires, things. But what do you do with a desire? You pray about it. You ask God to do something about it. And when it's not met, you sometimes just grieve it, but you can't control it. Goals are the things you can control. So I always like what Crabb said. He said, when you confuse a desire for a goal, when you try to take something that should be just a desire, the things you pray about, maybe you long for, but you made it a goal, like I can control this. Then when that gets blocked and you're not being the way I want you to be, or life's not turning out the way I want it to turn out, now I'm angry. But the more appropriate, if you see it clearly,
yes,
actually, I can't control that. And I'm sad it's not happened yet.
Yes.
And so I grieve. And the Holy Spirit comes and ministers to us in our grief. And we're comforted and we're strengthened. And we can grieve not as those who have no hope.
Wow.
But if we're covered up with an anger that's simply a mask for the deeper level of grief that we're actually experiencing. And I found that in the Gospels. Yes, Jesus did get mad.
Mm-hmm.
But he was mad at religiosity that was blocking people from seeing who God really is.
Exactly. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know why. I mean, I guess, you know, one of the questions on everyone's mind who's an evangelical Christian today, it's like, why? How can we not just be mad at all these things that have changed around us so much and values that have shifted so much? Well, the world that Jesus ministered in and that Paul ministered in of a Roman culture, I've studied it. It's
the same.
It was awful, right?
Yeah.
It was a world in which women were oppressed to lengths that, oh, and men took boys as their partners, and culture was rife with open pornography and prostitution, and they worshiped the emperor as if he were God. And all that stuff's just horrible. It's sickening. But why wasn't Jesus just railing against that all the time? Why wasn't he?
Yeah.
I just think that when we put on the lenses that see as Jesus sees, we begin to grieve and we pray a lot more. Wow. And we yearn and we pray. And then we realize he saw sinners like this, sheep who were harassed without a shepherd. I want to see people like that.
Exactly.
He didn't just go, oh, those sinners, that's the whole problem of the world. Look at them. No, he saw. It's like they're under spiritual persecution from a foe who's unseen but real. And they were being harassed and they didn't have a shepherd. And so what he felt was he had compassion for them.
Yes.
He wanted to heal them.
Forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing.
Give them. He wanted to forgive them.
That's what he was saying to them.
Yeah.
So I think this is so insightful and so different than what we're hearing. I think anger is an easy answer. Anger is a lot easier than sadness, because well, sadness is uncomfortable. It's much easier to just be right and have an opinion and to say what needs to happen and know what to do. Grief feels like you're giving up. It can feel that way. I don't believe it is, but it can feel like, oh, I'm just collapsing and sad. You're
right. It feels to admit a loss.
Yes.
Somehow feels like you're empowering the loss, but you're not. Yeah. You're just admitting it.
No. And in my grief is when we see the ability to step into what's next. Like that's when God speaks to us, when we're entering into that space. That's when we can hear from him versus just being angry and them versus us and all the stuff. Like,
yes. Yes. I just offer this because this may just apply to somebody that's joined us right now. Is I've experienced this, I've seen this happen, and I think it may be for someone that a relationship can change so dramatically when you're willing to be in touch with the grief that you have of the disappointment of what has not yet come to pass, and yet being masked with your frustration and anger or even controlling behaviors. And the healing is going to come when you allow yourself to feel that grief and invite God into it. Yeah. And it's vulnerable, but that's where relationships are healed, right? Mm-hmm. And when we get our bluster up and we try to be more controlling and make someone be what we think they ought to be, we know it never works, but we're lured into it through wrong vision.
Mm. Oh my gosh, there's so much we could talk about. I feel like we could talk for a long time on this topic, but I want to wind it up just with a final question. When we see things the way Jesus sees them, how does that bring us the peace, bring us the rest that we're missing as a culture?
Yeah. When you stop, and the good thing about this little prayer is you can start today, now, and tonight. Jesus, how do you see this? I like that. I think we need some breath prayers, brief enough for a single breath, but deep enough to change everything. And so I think we just start and it becomes instantly, therefore, a mindful moment. It becomes a pause, which to me means a mini Sabbath. So such craziness of our lives. It's a pause that says, I might not be seeing it right. That's a wonderful admission because it's saying to Jesus, I'd rather see it your way.
Yeah.
And that's worshipful.
Yeah.
That's beautiful and worshipful. So there's a pause, but there's a connecting in that. Because when I say, Jesus, how do you see this? In a mystical way, I'm inviting Christ by his Spirit to let me be in those moments, in some way that I wasn't previously, experiencing an authentic attachment with the Savior,
right?
Connecting. We're looking together.
Right. You know? Yeah.
You're letting your soul attune.
Yeah.
Look with, you know? I mean, this is like attuning, like a mother that attunes to her baby and knows what the baby's feeling.
Right.
I think we do that with Jesus, and now we're connecting. And in that connecting, there's something miraculous that's happening.
Right.
And then we simply allow ourselves the freedom to look again. Well, I mean, honestly, Alicia, just describing the process to myself, which I've done 1,000 times, I sense the peace of the Lord in the midst of it.
Amazing.
It's the opposite of strife.
Yeah, it is.
The opposite of strife.
Yeah.
To attune to Christ and say, I want to see through your eyes. So much peace comes just through the simple process of doing that.
You hit on something that I think makes that process unique, and that is that you're looking with Christ. He's not looking down on you. We're always looking up to Christ, of course, but he's looking beside us as someone who wants us to see things differently. And we are submitting to let ourselves see something differently. So there is this partnership happening.
It's a partnership.
Yeah.
And so when I pray it, I like to imagine myself shoulder to shoulder with Jesus.
Mm, yeah.
I mean, isn't this the invitation he gave? Come and see.
Mm-hmm.
Come and see. I mean, he takes these fishermen and a tax collector and people, and he lets them walk, right? Maybe this is part of why it's called a walk. you walk beside someone.
Yes.
If you join someone on a walk, now you're starting to look where they're looking.
True.
And that's what we do. That's what we do. It's like a simple illustration. My wife and I, we love to take walks on the beach here in North Carolina. And I have walked the La Jolla little beach there, but we've got long beaches that keep going.
Yeah.
And we'll walk. We can go walk for miles on the beach. And she and my daughter, they've got a capacity to find prehistoric shark's tooth, you know, shark's teeth.
Wow.
The little black thing. You know, and
that's amazing.
And I can't find them. I mean, I find them every now and then, but they just read, oh, there's shark's tooth. Pick up, you know, like that. And so we're looking for sharks too. We're looking down and all of a sudden we look and there are about three or four people and they're looking out into the ocean and they're pointing. So we stopped looking for shark's teeth.
Yeah.
We came up to them and we stood next to them and said, what do you see? And they said, dolphins right out there, not far off. We said, where? In order to see where, we have to stand next to them and look where they're pointing.
Yeah.
So while their eyes are looking, our eyes are looking, and now we see the dolphins.
Mm-hmm.
Their joy becomes our joy.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing to see dolphins in the wild. It's a beautiful thing like that. And so we're seeing what they're seeing. So what they were experiencing and we weren't, and we could have walked right by, now we're experiencing. I think it's like that.
Yeah.
I think it's like that. I think it's like, use another beach story. I get to the beach. I run out there and just say hello to the beach. You know, if my wife gets there, she starts putting things away, cleaning off counters or whatever, you know. And I go there a few years ago, run out to the beach. The sun is setting. This beach we go to, believe it or not, the sun in the wintertime will set over the ocean because the beach is kind of headed south. So it's one of the only places, one of the only places on the East Coast where we get to have a West Coast type look. Okay. Well, the sunset over the ocean is spectacular, right? But it was a beautiful, beautiful orange and pink hues. It's just, it was just grand. I ran in. I got Ann. I said, Ann, you got to come see the sunset. She said, all right, I'll come. She didn't come. Sun's setting fast, right? And I run back in. I said, honey, it's going away. You don't want to miss it. Please come. And because, you know, if you love someone, and you see something beautiful, you want to share it with them. You want them to see what you're seeing.
Mm.
And so finally she came out just in time. We held hands and watched the sunset and just had a moment of celebration of God's grandeur. And I thought, maybe the invitation to discipleship's more like that. Maybe it's more like when Jesus says, come and see, it's more like me inviting my wife into a sunset than it is him inviting us into some kind of follow an ideology. It's just, let me show you, let me see. And so I really believe that's possible. And I think that's goes far to explain what it means to have the eyes of our heart enlightened, to see the hope of our calling, the riches of our inheritance, and the power, the incomparable power that's at work in and through us. I think it's what it means to have a share in the mind of Christ.
Yeah.
All that and more. Mm. Just see as he sees.
Yeah. Beautifully put. Thank you so much for that. All the things that you've been sharing, as I shared about in the introduction, are from your new book. So tell us where we can learn more about you. Tell us about the book a little bit.
Well, the book's available wherever you want to get your books, but you can also get it at pastoralan.org.
Okay.
And Alicia, at our website, we have a radio broadcast that also you can get at our website, but I write a daily blessing. I believe so in the power of blessing, a positive vision spoken in faith in accord with God's word that tells us who we really are. So we rise up to meet the blessing that's affirmed over our lives.
Amen.
And so I write a blessing every day and it's available for free. You can just go on there, you put your email in and you'll get it every day. Lots and lots of messages, lots of free content there at pastoralan.org. And also, if you prefer to get the book from us, which you're welcome to do at pastoralan.org, then we will also send you the new video series that I did on the subject of seeing as Jesus sees. So you'll get a link to that as well. But lots of good stuff at pastoralan.org. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing today. This has been incredible. I really appreciate you.
Thank you, Alicia. I would so love talking to you. I'm nourished for the conversation and I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you. One of my favorite paradigms that he gave us in that conversation was the picture of standing next to Jesus and looking at a picture or of a sight or something that we are walking through. the image that he spoke about was this archaeological site, how he had said he had taken that whirlwind trip to Europe with his wife all those years ago, and how it didn't really make sense to look at all these places. It just looked like crumbled dirt. But then when he had a tour guide, even though he was saying they would just kind of follow behind people and listen, doesn't matter, still getting the information, right? How he, once you had that information, once you had that perspective, it was so much more enlightening and empowering. I recently came back from a trip to Italy, and I had seen, or I just saw over and over how a little bit of knowledge from someone else, a tour guide or a friend who was a local to the area, when they told me something about what could just be a pile of rocks or just an old city or an old wall, it opened it up in an incredible new way. And you have so much more respect and so much more awe for what's happening and what you're seeing in front of you. I just love that idea, because we need, like we said, we need a fresh perspective. We need to be able to look at something from a different angle. Often we have these lenses that we put on that just feel like, oh, this is just another example of this happening in this person's life, or another example of how I'm not this, or I need this. And it's just, we get stuck in these ruts. And our God is so good to not yell at us for being stuck in a rut again, but for coming down and sitting with us in the rut and saying, let's look at it together. Let's look at it from a different way. And like we talked about in that conversation, maybe it might be something that needs to be grieved or to be honored in a different way versus just being angry. So as he had invited us to do in that conversation, I want to invite you to as well to take some time this week to bring before the Lord those things that you are just tired of dealing with, need new perspective on, need help with. Bring them to God. Think of them as you're putting them before you, and you're standing, let's say, before a view of some kind of, let's say, archaeological site or old building that has historical value, and you're looking at it, and imagine Jesus standing right next to you. Imagine him helping you have a different view of what's ahead. Imagine what would be the wisdom that he might share with you. We can't make these things up. This is why it's God doing it, not just us imagining. But ask him for help and saying, what is it that I'm not seeing? Or what is it that I might need to let go of? Or what is it that I might need to grieve? Where is the frustration and the darkness that I'm feeling, that heaviness? Where is that coming from? And how can I have a different take on it, God? So that's just something simple you can do this week. If you are walking through one of those places and you need some help with that new perspective, and I can encourage you and pray for you, I would love to do that for you. You can always reach out to me on Instagram. It's at Alicia Michelle Coach. I would love to be able to offer any biblical wisdom or truth, but ultimately Jesus is the one you need. So I would encourage you to spend time, just even if you can take 15 minutes. I mean, it's better if you can have more time than that on a weekend or something, and a couple hours, maybe sit outside, go into nature and just bring it before him. But even just those little glimpses and beginning to create that habit of connecting with him in this way, I just think he's really onto something here as a way to really grow in our faith and to make it practical to see Jesus every day in our lives. All right, friend, take care. And I look forward to seeing you on our next episode.
Thanks for joining me today for the Christian Mindset Coach. If you love today's show, you've got to check out my free mindset workshop. In this free training, I share about the secret weapon for rewiring our brain to align with God's truth, the proven brain science tool that pro athletes and high achievers have used for decades. I've personally helped hundreds of Christian women use this tool to find healing from a lifetime of worry, shame, and striving. And I'd love to help you use this tool in your life as well. Sign up now for this free training at vibrantchristianliving.com/mind. I'll see you back here next week.